Good morning, everyone. My name is Tom Kramer. I'm your chairperson for this first meeting of the morning. I'm a General Service Board trustee, a regional trustee from the Western Canada region, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be here this morning and chair this, what I expect to be a very informative and wonderful meeting. I'd like to ask that we begin with a moment of silence in gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 70 years. We have three wonderful speakers who will each speak for approximately 20 minutes today, sharing a variety of information pertaining to their professional background, personal experiences as it relates to alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. Our first speaker I'd like to introduce to you this morning comes to us from Turkey, Izmir, Turkey, which is a city on the Aegean Sea on the southwest coast of Turkey. Yes, Dr. Levent Tokarcoglu. How did I do? Thank you very much. So, without any further ado, I'd like you to help me give a very warm North American welcome, international welcome, to Dr. Tokarcoglu.
Good morning. Dear chairman, dear speakers, dear members, dear all participants. It's a really big honor to be here with you. Honor and fear, a little bit. There is no reason to try to explain my honor. It's obvious. Your excellent efforts and kindness put me to happy and bashful. Thank you. Reason of my fear is lack of sufficient English. Sorry for my faults about English. Sorry. And I want to begin with my words talks with a Turkish Anatolian philosopher and poet since 800 centuries ago. He was Mevlana. He said, "Come, whoever you are, whether you are not a believer, whether you worship fire or an idol, whether you have repented 100 times, whether you have broken a vow of repentance 100 times, this is not a vow of desperation. Come, however you are." My impression is that all you have a more experience than I on alcohol. So I don't want to repeat these tedious topics as a medical expert. I will just talk about me and us. I want to say something about my country a little bit. Turkey has been called the cradle of civilization. Its history dates back to 2000 before Christ. The heirs to many centuries of cultures makes Turkey a cultural wealth. Turkey also has a very fascinating recent history. Upon the decline of the Ottoman Empire, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk founded the Republic of Turkey in 1923. He led his country into peace and stability with economic growth and complete modernization. His political principle was peace at home, peace in the world. Turkey's geographical and cultural position is like a bridge between Europe and Asia. Our people is mostly Islamic, but we are very different from the other Islamic countries because of the only one secular, non-clerical Islamic country is Turkey all over the world. Although our government has Islamic trans Turkeys now, is trying to join to the European community. Turkey is a contradictory and paradoxical country. Different attitudes, beliefs, ideologies, lifestyles, styles are blended in one land. You can see a woman who dressed like a Western style. On the other hand, a woman who dresses and you can never see any part of body, even her face, sometimes. Interestingly, the women of the richer class of Islamic citizens of Turkey goes to exclusive hotels, malls and dress best clothes from Versace. I want to give you some examples of our spectacular and specific position in the world. Tekel is a monopoly company of the state that produces and marketing alcohol and cigarettes all over the Turkey since 1962, date back to Ottoman Empire, and today in Republic of Turkey, it had been first and sole company till a couple of years. Nowadays, besides the state monopoly company, there are some private companies producing and marketing alcohol beverages and cigarettes in Turkey. Having a difference from the other Islamic countries, in Turkey, alcohol consumption rates are very high. Legal age limit is 18. So if you are older 18, you can drink alcohol. Our population is about 70 million. And problematic alcohol user is more than 7 million. Alcohol consumption, 700 million liter per year in Turkey and is one of the first five countries for alcohol consumption per capita. Percent, 66% of all crimes and 61% of traffic accidents are due to alcohol consumption in Turkey. And our laws are very laws. For example, if you kill a man at a traffic accident with DUI, you will be gone to the jail for just three years. You can kill if you want and if you don't like it. Anyone. Unfortunately. You can easily recognize that we have an enormous problem, alcohol use, and the problem is getting bigger day by day in Turkey. There is an idiom in Turkish. I will try to translate it into English. Like an ostrich, neither camel nor bird. According to me, our problem is the identity problem. We are neither Western country nor Eastern country anymore. But at the same time, we are either Western country and Eastern country. I have no exact statistics about health condition about Turkey, but there are more than 12 treatment facilities for alcoholics that have an inpatient ward in seven cities. Bed numbers are about 200 and more. A lot of state universities and private hospitals have been accepting and treating alcoholic patients at their outpatient units. My city, Izmir, is the third largest city of the Turkey and population are about 3 million. I have been working at the psychiatric clinic of the state hospital in Izmir. We have an inpatient unit with 28 beds. But these beds are not just for addicted people. We have been admitting all kinds of patients, for example, schizophrenia, bipolar depression, anxiety, so, etc. So our ward is not specifically for alcohol treatment facility. We just admit the patients who are intoxicated or deprived from alcohol for delirium tremens case. Because of our physically insufficient service capacity and insufficient crew, outpatient treatment is the only treatment option for us. But I hope next year a new psychiatric unit will be open at the State Hospital of Izmir and there will be 12 beds for addicted people. Besides State Hospital in Izmir, There is a universal hospital that treats addicted people as inpatient and outpatient, and they have about 15 beds. Yeah, besides Korean world obstacles, we have some pharmacological treatment restrictions. For example, our Ministry of Health has not been yet approved naltrexone, methadone, buprenorphine to use in Turkey. So our treatment tools are very restricted. I want to say something about Turkish Alcoholics Anonymous. Turkey's AA history dates back for 40 years. Today, there are about 25 AA groups, but 10 to 11 of them are active now as a group member, activation, and periodical meetings. Especially my friends from Izmir have been working very hard like an ant. They will hand on a convention on October in Kuşadası with our Greek friends, and they have been invited you with sincere greetings to our convention via me. I want to give Turkish AA's web address hereby. Please check it out. And www.aaturkey.com. It's very easy. So, I have been joined and working with AA for about 5 years. I have been participated in the regional and national meetings, conventions. I gave them some briefings, lectures, etc. They have referred a lot of patients to me for advice or to treatment or, and vice versa. I have never been expected any benefit or advantage. I've been a volunteer of AA, and what an honor. They named me one of the best friends of Turkish AA. Thank you. Surprisingly, they have been proposed my name as a candidate to this convention secretly. Really, it's really. I'm surprised. I'm very happy, really. And a little bit, I want to say my treatment style. I'm not an orthodox psychiatrist. I'm not belong with any treatment school of psychiatry. I believe that whatever works for the patient's well, it's most welcome. While I was treating an alcohol-addicted people, my favorite formula is pharmacotherapy plus psychotherapy plus AA's support therapy. When you combine these tools, your treatment success will getting better. Somebody could ask me, Dad, why did you choose addiction topic for specialty? I will try to explain. At the very beginning of my psychiatric residency, I had been interested in schizophrenia. Later, my interest turned to psychoanalysis. But at last, I had been decided to study addiction psychiatry. Sigmund Freud said that nobody can go farther away from his subconscious permit. We have very severe depression and alcohol genes among my own family, my father, my uncles, my brothers, and me. You know, these genes run in family. I'm susceptible to alcohol abuse and or addiction. There is an idiom in English, you know, a calamity only rarely affects its immediate victim. I realize that we have a problem and no way out unless to exposure and battle with this problem. When I was coming from the airport to the hotel by coach, I met with a sweet lady. After a little talk, she asked me that, what did you learn about addiction? Tell me 10 or less words. Yes, I laughed and could not reply her. It was like a joke, but striking question. My inner deep feelings and response were sorrow and lost. I had been used alcohol some periods in my past while I was depressed, and I really had been felt what was this desperateness, loneliness, abandonment of friends. Again, a Turkish poet, a poem. Those who don't grieve alone can't know how silence inspires fear, how one talks to oneself and writes from mirror to mirror in search of a living soul they cannot understand. I mean, I'm not living as a glass house and talking to. I'm not a sand. I really know what's mean from hero to zero. Finally, maybe we have no rich treatment tools like naltrexone, no enough treatment facilities in Turkey, but we have the good friends like you, and we have hope. We should have to keep our hopes and efforts till die. I will give my last words again to a Turkish poet, Nazım Hikmet. The great humanity has no shade on his soil, no lamp on his road, no glass on his window, but the great humanity has hope. You cannot live without hope. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tofiçoğlu. We have a moment or two. We could entertain a question or two if anyone might have a question they'd like to pose to our doctor. And if something comes to mind, yes, would you please address the question at the mic, please?
Good morning. Thank you for being there, number one. Why are there not more actual treatment facilities in Turkey? I mean, is it because the government is moving slow, or because your passion seems like you've got a very small number of beds for the great problem?
I'm not sure exactly, but I think it's our government's ideological attitudes or view. I said our government has Islamic roots, and they don't believe in addiction as an illness. Yeah, and they are Islamic, and they say God banned it to drink, and so we don't care. Okay.
All right, Bill P., San Diego. Are alcohol and drugs used in Turkey, or is it just alcohol?
Yeah, both, unfortunately. And last day we talked with Jim and Dorothy. Maybe the bigger problem is more than drug in Turkey, because, you know, Turkey is a transit point of between East Asia and from Afghanistan to Europe, and a transit point in Turkey. So the biggest problem, getting bigger problem, is drug abuse in Turkey, especially in Istanbul. Istanbul is a very big city and very rich city, and our problem is not alcohol, just alcohol. Is drug problem is a very big problem.
Good morning, Doctor, and thank you for sharing. My name is Craig, and I'm from Miami, Florida. My question is, are your groups active in treatment service in bringing meetings or bridging the gap into treatment facilities in Turkey? Are any groups or members going in and carrying the message?
A message, for example... Please repeat your question again.
I didn't understand exactly.
Are any of your AA groups in Izmir or anywhere else in Turkey, any of the groups bringing treatment meetings into the few treatment facilities that you do have in Turkey? Are they carrying the message into the patients and clients of these facilities?
Yeah. We want to treat some patients together with AA and our medical orientation, And we invite them to our treatment facilities from AA. And they try to tell their philosophy, and they invite after treatment, medical treatment, to their convention, their meetings, and so we will try to study work together every time in Izmir, especially in Izmir.
Okay, thank you very much. And in the interest of time, we need to move on to our next speaker. We may have time later on to entertain more questions. Thank you, and hold those thoughts for those people that were approaching the microphone. Now gives me great pleasure to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Georgi Stefano, doctor, social worker, and excuse me while I find my... My apologies for that mistake. Dr. Georgi Stefano, LCSW, a CA, Executive and Clinical Director, San Diego State University, Driving Under the Influence program. And she assures me that the program is not to teach people how to drive under the influence. Please help me welcome Dr.
Hi, it is really an honor and a pleasure to be here today. You know, they call me an expert in the field, and the way you get to be an expert is you just stay at it for a real long time. I had started my first job in the field in 1969 in the therapeutic community. And it was really interesting. You know, these things are not accidents. Over the last couple of days, I was kind of figuring out how I wanted to structure my remarks. And I was sitting in a very lovely restaurant last night here in Toronto and enjoying dinner. And I was surprised when someone walked to my table. It was a woman who I had treated 20 years ago. And it really was such a heart thing. And it really had me reflecting, because this was an individual who had a very, very hard time and who has been able to achieve 20 years of recovery. And later on in the evening, actually, the man that she's about to marry came to see me. And we had a lovely chat. And it really, what it brought home to me was actually 3 points that I want to talk about today. And the first point was that at the time that this woman was in treatment in a hospital, I've been an inpatient hospital director for 5 years, a social worker in a psychiatric unit. I've been an inpatient director in my own facility for 8 years, as well as having done employee assistance work. So I've really done the gamut, and now I'm the director of the DUI program. But when this woman came into treatment, to me, it was really the best of what treatment and AA could do together. It was the old 28-day treatment program. And, you know, 28 days is not a magic number. It could be 29 days, it could be 31 days. But the fact of the matter was that we got to know who the patients were. We were able to do assessments. We were able to really work with patients so that we could prepare them to be handed off to the support systems of AA and NA. And in those days, in those years, we really were beginning to develop the kind of model that I really believe would have led to a lot more success. And what we have today and what we face in the medical community today is managed care and insurance companies cutting the time more and more and more. The hospital that I used to work at, a friend of mine works at today, and she can go home for the weekend and there's totally new client patients on Monday morning. Now, I don't have to tell you about post-acute withdrawal symptoms. I don't have to tell you about how long it takes just to clear a little bit. But this is a problem that we're facing, and I want to bring this forward to the community. Because not only are we dealing with insurance companies that won't allow for a lot of detox, methamphetamine, for instance, is not something that can be detoxed, but also the shortened length of stays, which makes it very difficult to do good assessments. You add on top of this a profile of clients who start using at younger and younger ages with much more complicated kinds of issues. And so it's very hard to ferret out. You know, back in the 80s, the typical profile of a male alcoholic may have been someone who started to drink in the service or started to drink in their early 20s. Today, we have people drinking at 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old. And yet we're not given the kind of time that we need to work with this population, which puts much more of a stress on the AA community because there's a much more difficult profile client. So you get them really before they've had much of a chance to really have any kind of treatment plan or any kind of action plan developed for them. And so I think that really, and it's really interesting because, you know, this is a lifelong disease, and yet all the treatment monies are in the first 30 days at best, and sometimes less than a week. And so those are things that we need to grapple with because they're affecting the quality of care throughout our country. Which leads me into the second issue, and that is the issue of co-occurring disorders. Now, I've been around a long time, and I have to be honest with you. In the days that I worked at the psychiatric hospital that had a chemical dependency program, many times our patients got better despite the doctors. It was the truth. It was the truth. But today I would like to tell you that we do have a rising field of medical addictionologists who are dedicating themselves to forming part of an interdisciplinary team. And we need them. We need them. We need all the help we can get on our teams. But we need to have a balance. We went from a time when hospitals wouldn't add alcoholism counselors to the staff to a time now when they'll hire more alcoholism counselors because they're cheaper and not hire some of the other people that can add to the team. So those are some of the things that are stressing our systems. I am the child of an alcoholic. I saw my father struggle with his alcoholism for years. And he couldn't understand. He was a very disciplined man. He could not understand how he could not get sober. It was baffling to him. What he didn't know, and what I came to learn later, is that the doctor had him on Valium. Well, you might as well have walked him over to the bar and poured the glass for him. Because it was the Valium that was keeping him from being able to initiate a recovery process. And because of that, it took me years to realize why I was doing what I was doing, but again, there's no accidents. I came into the field because I knew we could do better and we must do better. We have enough anecdotal information to know there's a whole group of people who are doing better and who are clean and sober today because they had proper interventions with medical management of medication. And we know there's a whole group of people who did worse because their doctors did not know how to prescribe medication appropriately. You talk to some of the old timers. I have a friend, she was diagnosed in the 60s as schizophrenic. Crazy, absolutely crazy. So we have to do better. And how can we do better when we have less time? And then for those of you who have heard the news lately, you may have heard Tom Cruise. I'm really upset with Tom. And he looked kind of manic to me if you saw him on TV. We may have our first famous bipolar coming out pretty soon. You know, that just sets things back years. Because the issue is this. Again, there are people who have been misdiagnosed and poorly treated and given medications that do not help them and, in fact, have hurt them. But there are also people who have been helped. And we can't take these all or nothing, polar opposite positions and expect to get anywhere as a community. We really need to practice humility and understand that these are complex issues. You know, in thinking of an analogy, I live in California where there's a house on every hilltop. They're all over the place. And yet, no matter how many tract homes are built, every home has a blueprint. Because every home goes on a different piece of property that has different environmental issues, different grading and things like that that have to be addressed in the building of that house. And so everybody knows, every builder who's built a home knows, you know, three bedrooms, two baths, whatever. And yet when they build a home, they have to take in consideration the particular nature of where they're building. It's the same thing when it comes to treatment. We know what a standard treatment protocol is, but that doesn't mean that it can't be modified to better serve a patient or a client. It doesn't mean that we can't do a little bit more thinking about what may be useful to that client. And we need the time to do the assessments to make that happen. Because the assessment is like the blueprint. It gives us the idea of where we're going. In the state of California, we just passed in April regulations that certify drug and alcohol counselors. And I'm very happy about that because I think we need to improve our level of expertise. And we also need to be able to help this population get decent wages and decent working conditions because people are overworked and they're underpaid and they're poorly treated. And then people want to know why they relapse. Well, for most alcoholism counselors, they need 2+ jobs to survive in the state of California. It's very hard. I supervise 46 individuals on a weekly basis. These are gallant men and women who do everything they possibly can for their clients and who do it under very difficult conditions. So I'm happy that certification may give us the opportunity to help raise wages in our state and be able to recognize their contribution to this field because, again, I think it needs to be a collaborative effort. And one of the things that certification has you know, really brought up for us is an understanding that there are co-occurring disorders. And I see it all the time in our DUI programs. We have 3-month programs, 6-month programs, 18-month programs. And I'll go back and I'll look at a profile of someone. Now, one of the things I'm very proud of, the state is just beginning to make some regulations about this. I don't know if they're going to pass, but I know that I've done what I can to make the state aware of it. But prior to this happening, people would come into DUI programs and sit and have sessions with counselors for 18 months. Imagine being in a group for 18 months and taking group and education and having something else going on with you and nobody picking it up and nobody getting you any help for it and then wondering why people are relapsing, then going into accidents or killing someone and end up going to jail because that becomes the treatment. We are the first DUI program in the state of California when one of our counselors thinks that a client has something else going on with them, some sort of other psychiatric issue. They flag that case, and the clinical team sees this person. No extra charge, no extra money involved. We keep it clean. And what we do is we'll do an intervention with whoever their doctor may be, and if they don't have one, we can send them to a variety of different county services. And basically, we give them a letter, and we say to the doctor, you need to discuss this with your doctor because you have signs and symptoms that are consistent with this, that, or the other thing. Or you're a diabetic and you're drinking on alcohol, and we need you to discuss that with the doctor because we're not sure the doctor knows about it. And it's really interesting the kind of responses we're getting back from the community. And again, it's not all or nothing. We have some of the doctors who really get it, and they change meds, and they realize Xanax does not work. with alcohol. Hello? Great. Good call. And so we get them to change that. And that, to me, is a victory, a little victory. Other letters we get back, it's basically, leave me alone, this is my client, they're safe, put them through the mill, which I find highly offensive. Because what we have with DUI programs, I have 2,000 clients a week. Now, even in my best days of treatment, maybe I treated 100 people a year. This is 2,000 clients a week that we have the opportunity to do some interventions with. And so what we're doing now in our state, in my program, and we're getting the state to come on board with this, is that we're saying, listen, you need to have this conversation with the person responsible for your care. And you need to take a look at some of these issues. And what we're finding is about 10, and it's interesting, it's consistent with some of our national figures, about 10% of the clients that we get sent to us do have some co-occurring disorders, and many have not been treated. And this gives them an opportunity to begin to address some of the things that may have kept them from being able to be clean and sober. And that leads me into my last issue. Do I have some more time? Okay. Kind of following, tracking this. And that is just a personal opinion that I have that I want to share with you. One of the requirements that our county has, and that many of the other DUI programs in the state have, it's run by county, is that our clients need to have their attend AA meetings, or multiple conviction program people, one a week, and they have to have them signed in AA meetings in the community. I'm very much against this. And I'd like to tell you why. First off, let me say that many people have found recovery by being forced into going to meetings. And we know that, and we know that to be true. But having said that, I think what's happening is very risky. And I want to differentiate between treatment programs requiring meetings, where counselors can talk to their clients about the meetings that they've gone to, and courts that, in my opinion, at least in the state of California, are dumping clients into meetings. There is a difference. I want to make that distinction. Because I think we have to look at our codependency issues here. We started off by hearing the traditions. By signing a slip, you're violating anonymity. Okay? You're becoming a tool of our court systems. Our courts need to provide treatment services, and people need to be led to AA like they've always been led, through attraction. The door should always be open. People should always be welcome, but it should not be a mandatory process, because that process really is at the heart of the fiber. I see in my program, our sociopaths go in the bathroom and have somebody else sign their slips. And because I can't check with you to make sure that signature is legitimate, they pass and they go back on the road. And some, for instance, I have a large Hispanic population. They're afraid of getting deported. They're not going to do that. And yet they sometimes are failing the program because they haven't gone to enough meetings, and yet I know they're really making the effort, and the meetings that are on their slip are honest. You really can verify, but it's a way that the court is shifting responsibility from themselves over to AA. And so my hope is that the collective consciousness of meetings will think about that and think about whether signing the slips really has any validity for the process of recovery. And always again asking you to keep your doors open and your hearts open. When I think back of the client I met last night, it was the best of what we all could do. And the partnership that we have had together and that I've experienced has been remarkable. I love this program. I am one of your best friends. I thank you for all you've given me and all you've taught me over the years, and that I hope that I can continue to spread the word of your fellowship. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'd like to take an opportunity now to entertain maybe two questions. If someone would like to approach the mic, they have an opportunity to ask one or two questions of our guest. Sure.
Hi, I'm Dennis, I'm alcoholic. I have a question and a comment. I take people from detox to meetings. I've been doing it for about 7 years. Somebody else started them to me. And they used to force them to go to meetings, okay? And now they don't. Before, I could just go in there and get them and go. And they would go. Okay. Now I got to drag them out, coerce them, push, attract, whatever word, to get them. And a lot of times I don't get any. When I got them before, they said, well, it's been this way for 3 years. I says, I've been 7 years, ma'am, and you used to go and you used to get help. And no, they didn't sign, no slip was signed, of course, but it did them a lot of good. Now, obviously, and I've seen a guy do this for 25 years and from the hospital. Now, he just took them from the hospital, from psychiatric or whatever. He brought them up. And they got better. He did for 25 years. So you can imagine how many people he helped. And I learned that from him. And I learned it from another guy. Yeah? And sometimes, and you have to tread very lightly when you go in there, because I have a very aggressive attitude. And with some of these clinical people and the detox, to get them out, you know. And I finally got my son to go in the detox, and they said he's too dry. He's 2 days sober that we can't have him. He went home and used. And he called back up and he says, we have no beds now. You know, and he's manic depressant as well. And it's very, very difficult. I've been working with him for 20 years. You know, he got me sober first. And I've been working on getting him sober. And different times the director of the treatment center says, what are you doing with him? I said, I'm keeping him alive. He says, oh, good. You know, and different things. And he's giving me advice. Okay. And now I've seen from this doctor here, overseas, doing it their way, and learning, and being able to listen and learn, and your good attitude about both sides of it. And we in AA, and you guys, need to cooperate better. And I've learned something the last couple of years as a treatment chair. And it's very hard because of my thick thinking, you know. And I'm glad to see, you know, I've seen all the doctors on here. And I said, gee, I don't know if I really want to go to this. You know? So anyway, it does have a point about forcing people to meetings and not forcing them. That was right.
Thank you very much for your question. I think you make the distinction that I tried to make earlier. There was a distinction between treatment providers making meetings mandatory and the courts just ordering. Because the secret is in what you said. You brought. You went with. You accompanied. It was part of an overall strategy to work with a client and introduce them to something. That's very different than somebody just saying, your probation officer is going to check your court slips to make sure that you've gone to these things. And that's the difference. I'm not saying that the treatment program should not make it a requirement. But I think that's just dumping. And do you understand, I know, for instance, in California, if you have 35 or 40 people in a meeting and 5 or 6 of them are court-ordered, you're not going to affect the quality of the meeting. But I know in California, for instance, in Narcotics Anonymous, you could have 30 people in a meeting and 25 to 27 of them are court-ordered. And so, you know, that's the risk that's run. The other point that you make that I'd like to address is the fact that we talked about your son, something we call harm reduction. We would love everyone to be clean and sober forever. That sometimes cannot happen. But harm reduction means that we do what we can to give them a day at a time. The way I look at it is we do what we can to give people a day at a time. And whatever that may take to put together, that's what we do. Yes.
My name is Ingrid. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from Munich, Germany. And I've listened with great pleasure to your talk and also to your talk. Thank you very much. And about these court slips, that's a two-sorted edge in our meetings, because in Germany the courts are just getting aware that they had this possibility to refer people to
AA. Stop it on our shores.
And we have the problem of violating the 12th tradition, and we cooperate, we don't affiliate. Now, the question is, do we affiliate by signing this thing? And so my question actually is, we usually had some, we did something, it's really not totally honest, so one of the groups signed it because he is not AA or she is not AA, but I am AA, am I not? And what I live is supposed to be AA, so I have to live to the 12th tradition also. But my question is, what's the alternative? How can I get the courts to cooperate rather than pulling us into their business? This is a thing we really don't know.
They need to spend money and set up treatment programs and hire recovery counselors and nurses and social workers to do treatment. And then as part of treatment, people are then introduced to the 12-step programs and continue with that. They're trying to cut out a step. And I think that the cutting out of that step leaves people very vulnerable. It really leaves people very vulnerable. And then the court is able to turn around and say, well, we did our thing and we mandated this and you didn't do it, so you violated what you were supposed to do, so now you can go to jail. You have to understand that in America, and I don't want to get off topic, but in America, especially in the area of drugs, the biggest treatment facility in America for drugs is jail. Jail all over the country. From Los Angeles, Detroit, New York, you name it, it's our jails that are treating, especially our crack cocaine addicts. So that's where that goes. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. It's now my pleasure to introduce our next presenter, Dr. Guo Song, who comes to us, his home being in China. He is currently a community addictions management program, works for that community, at the Institute of Mental Health at Woodbridge Hospital in Singapore. So would you help me welcome Dr. Guo Song.
It's in Chinese. Good morning, everybody. And today I'm very honored and very pleased to be here to share my experience in AA. Although I'm a doctor, but I must say that I knew about the alcoholic very, very little before I have a relationship with AA, have been involved in AA. And I was graduated in the Peking, Beijing Medical University, and 22 years ago. And while I was, China is a very big country and with a big population, 1.3 million people. But while I was, at the time of my graduation, we knew at that time that the drug alcohol abuse problems is not a problem in China. And Well, after graduation, I was working in a mental hospital. And at that time, I know that the alcoholic, my patient, stay with the other psychiatric patient, with schizophrenia, with depression patient, in the same ward. And we just saw the patient that in the late stage of the patient with alcohol problems, with kinds of psychosis and alcohol-induced psychosis, whatever. And also at that time that we thought that the alcoholic drug are the problem maker, you know. In the world, in the world around, every day we talk about our patient who is an alcoholic, you know. It's a real problem maker. And very often the nurse complain about this kind of patient to us. And yeah, although it's only one or two patients in the ward, or it can make a lot of problem. And you know, at that time that because of this, in our hospital, in 1992, we have a special ward to deal with this kind of patient. Because they're too much trouble, that we want to put them together in one ward. But I at that time, I feel very frustrated, you know, because most of the patients have a detoxification in my ward. And after that, just for stay there for two or three weeks, and then discharged to go back home. But a few weeks later, I saw them again, and with the same problem. And among my patients, even they were admitted for 20 times in my ward. And at that time, except for the antidepressant and antipsychotics, we have no method to deal with this kind of patient and how to prevent relapse. And so I'm very frustrated. But this situation changed till 2000. I still remember the day. It's very late. It's the spring, perhaps the spring, early in 2000. It's very late, and my friends and also a doctor from other hospital to call me. That there's a friend from America, and he's a psychologist, also a counselor, and he wants to meet you. It's the time to go back home. I'm hesitated whether I should see him or not. But actually, my friends take him to my office. It's still 5 or 6 o'clock, perhaps 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I meet this friend from America. This is Dr. David Powell, and also he is presented today, and he introduced me about AA, but to me, it's similar to AA, what I read about in the textbook, you know. In our textbook, every textbook about alcohol problems is mentioned about AA. To me, he talked about AA, but to me, it's quite similar to what I read in the textbook. And after actually go back to America, and one day, I'm so surprised that he told me that we will, he will help, he helped me to render and travel to America, to Minneapolis, to attend the international conference in, but at that time, you know, it's more interesting to me to go to America rather than attend the international conference. So, but while I was in the international convention, I was overwhelmed. I saw so many alcoholics who keep sobriety attend this kind of international convention. And in the convention, there are perhaps 50 to 60,000 alcoholics attend such a big convention, but they are in order. They and also yeah, without problem. And at night, there is a parade, right? I use the right word. It's a parade in the street, along the street. I saw that many people they walk slowly around the street and never drink. And chatting and smiling and everything is in order. And so I remembered that I have talked with my colleagues and who come with me. Is that true? Is that all the people are alcoholic? Is it the people that the same as I saw in China? It's amazing. It's amazing to me. So that after that, we have a discussion after this convention, and perhaps we may try to introduce this kind of a meeting to China. You know, in the following days that I attend some meetings, some AA meetings. So during the meeting, I know that the people, the experience of this kind of people are even worse than the patients who I saw in China. So it's incredible to me. So we decided to introduce this kind of the meeting to China. But thank you. But the problem is, how can I introduce AA to my patient? And how to explain this kind of organization to my government? And how to introduce AA to my colleagues? That means that it's effective to alcoholic. So after coming back to China, we organized. I'm at that time, to be frankly, that I'm not so sure whether it is effective to the our Chinese alcoholic. So I organized our patients in our meeting room, and for the first time I introduced about the AA. I introduced what I saw during the international convention. The big difficulty for me is how to explain about the higher power, how to explain about the God, you know, because in China, you know, in the long history, we have many religions, We have Taoism, we have Buddhism, we have Confucius, also we have Christian and Catholic and Islam, and so many religions. So how can we explain the God? So I try to explain the God as in Chinese, Lao Tian Ye. Lao Tian Ye means that means that we no matter, you know, it's a Chinese culture, no matter what kind of background of a religion, whenever people meet crisis situation, they always cry, they always shout about, ask help from heaven. To translate it directly, it's a big heaven, it's a great heaven. So I explain God, explain high power to the this kind of a great heaven to my patient. And after some meetings, I'm very encouraged by one of my patient's response. He told me that I feel really, really different, you know, during the meeting, and but I found that this alcoholic, this patient, are always very quiet during the meeting, never talk about himself. But from the response, I know that someone can have sense during this kind of meeting. And during the following meetings, he began to talk about himself. And from the history, I know that suffer a lot because of the drinking problems. You know, after graduation, he worked in a high standard in a government organization. But because of the drinking problems, he fired by the institute, and also he was in the edge of a divorce, and at the time he attended the first AA meeting, and he kept sobriety. It's very incredible that he kept the sobriety till today. And you know, 5 years ago, just the four of our doctors came to America to attend the international convention. But at that time, I cannot imagine that 5 years ago, today, we have 10 members of AA from China. And also I learned that today, this night, the flag of China will flying in the meeting. And also, as a doctor, I'm very happy that during my practice, I have resources to my patient. And I told them, if they really want to stop using drugs, if they really want to stop drinking alcohol, you can go to a meeting. You can learn from our AA members that who keep a long time sobriety from AA meeting. So today I feel very happy to be here and to see that our AA member from China can attend this kind of international convention. And at that time, I'm very grateful to my friends, especially grateful to the Dr. David Powell, who arranged our first travel to America to attend the international convention, and also during the following 5 years, after 2000, he gave us a lot of help and a lot of advice. And also, I'm grateful to the New York GSO, and he always give us advice, give us reading materials in Chinese, you know. And and every time when we ask some help, they always give what we really need. And right now in Beijing, the A meeting, you can find the A meeting not only in Beijing, and also in Tianjin, in Hebei, in Jilin. And I believe next 5 years, next the international convention, there will be more delegates, more A members from China. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We do have time for maybe one or two questions at the most. And in the interest of time, I would like you to have your question formulated in a manner that I could repeat it clearly over the microphone.
Hi, my name is Maria Alcoholic. Just a quick question. I just was curious to know, when you brought back to Beijing, how did you have literature? Did you bring the big book? Like, how did you introduce it to your patients?
The question, how did the doctor introduce AA to his patients?
Yes.
Was it through literature?
As a professional, as not an AA member.
As a professional and not an AA member.
Okay. Just I mentioned before that the most important for me to explain about the high power and the God to my patients. And also, we are very lucky. And when we introduce AA to China, we've already have the big book in Chinese. Although it's not in simplified Chinese, it's not the... So we work together with our colleagues to translate it into a simplified, to participate to translating the 44 questions and it's a pamphlet and the big book to simplify the Chinese.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sandy B. I'm an alcoholic from Miami, Florida. And I want to thank Dr. Fung, first of all, because I just came back from an extensive trip through China. And because of you and your efforts, I was able to attend that meeting in Beijing. And my question to you is, what can we do, or what can we do to help you to get other meetings in Beijing? With all those millions of people, just one meeting is not enough.
The question, what can we do to help Dr. Guo get more meetings established in Beijing?
The most thing that you can do is coming back to our meeting, you know? Come to our meeting as more as possible. And it's very helpful to our A members or to our patients to keep sobriety. And our patients who can keep sobriety for a long time is a kind of a role model to the our new patients. So you're welcome. And whenever you are in Beijing, please come to our meeting. You're welcome.
One more.
I'm Betty, and I'm an alcoholic.
And that's all I am, is an alcoholic. And I really, really want to thank you for emphasizing the spirituality, because I have a spiritual malady and the solution is spiritual. Thank you.
Since I said one more question, would this lady right next to the microphone here step forward?
My name is June Lee, and I am a member of AA. I have been sober 18 years, and I'm from Malaysia, and my family's from Singapore. And I went to a meeting in China in the diplomatic housing in Beijing in 1996, and there were no AA meetings. And I bought a big book translated in Chinese in Hong Kong. So this is so wonderful to hear. Thank you.
Well, we've reached. Thank you very much for those of you who have questions, and I trust that our presenters may be available privately afterwards if you had questions you'd like to address to them. I'd like to thank everyone very much for being here at this meeting this morning. I'd like to thank our three presenters one more time. Thank you for accepting the invitation to come here, to journey here from your respective countries, to be with us this weekend and share your experience. Thank you very much for the work that you do back in your respective communities in helping our fellow suffering alcoholics. It's so comforting to know that the people such as yourselves are doing the kind of work you're doing. Thank you all for the privilege to chair this wonderful meeting this morning. And I'd like to remind everyone that the meetings are all taped, and you would have an opportunity, if you wish, to purchase a tape later on. And would you help me now close our meeting with a moment of silence, and we'll follow that by the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.